Okay, so let's go around the horn before we get going so I get everybody's names right. It's Chris, David, and Zach, right?
You got it.
Chris, glasses.
Yes, glasses.
Zach, open shirt, looking sexy as hell.
Appreciate it.
No problem. And David, really great fashion Jesus. Sense with the Jesus. Oh, we're going to have a good cast today, kids. I'm looking forward to this one.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 28 of the Save Data Cast, the usually bi-weekly gaming discussion show where we talk news, reviews, random topics, and today how games have changed our lives. As always, I'm your host, David, and joining me is the captain of Save Data. That's Zach.
I'm in. Thank you. In the presence of greatness.
Zach, very how fluid. Many buttons are undone on your shirt right now? Because it's starting to look ludicrous. I want more. Don't okay. Button them up, son. I'm not saying that here.
For you, all right.
Wait, hey, one of Zach's most famous streams, it was just him sitting in a hot tub. Sorry, in his bathtub, so.
Fully clothed.
Service. I didn't feel any of that necessary information.
That voice there is our Fisher King himself. That is Chris.
It's Friday, you know what that means.
We surely do.
And last but surely not least, we have kind of funny co-founder Greg Miller joining us today. Welcome, Greg.
Hello, David. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Doing so absolutely great today.
Thanks so he took the day off for this.
Yeah,
I did. Yeah. I did take the day off. Yeah, treat yourself. You know?
What time zone are you in?
I'm St. Major's. I'm in Irvine. Okay.
So 4 o'clock, you took the day off. You couldn't even put in a half day. You've been psyching yourself up since 9 a.m. I appreciate it.
I mean, hey, you know, treat yourself. It's a weekend.
So walk me through the rest of it. What did you have for lunch, and how many games did you play getting ready for this?
Let's see. I had a Philly cheesesteak for lunch.
Nice. Yeah.
And then I played some Triangle Strategy.
Oh, I'm jealous. God, that's
great.
Yeah, I started it. I put like an hour and a half in or whatever, and it was one of those things like, this is going to dominate me, but I can't do it right now. You know what I mean? I was reviewing WWE. Now I got to move to Ghostwire, but then I'm going to come back. I think, honestly, you want to talk about how much I liked what I played? I'm going to come back to that before I go back for the Platinum and Horizon. Like, I'm going to double over to that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I stopped playing Horizon and play Triangle Strategy. So.
Wow.
Dude, as soon as when I was reading the reviews and they were talking about the choices and then even playing it, like a little bit of it, I was like, okay, yeah, this is going to be great.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I'm very excited to hop in. Elden Ring is consuming my life currently.
Sure,
but...
sure.
Yep. It got me to put down Horizon, and I was like so stalwart. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to play Horizon through and then I'll buy Elden Ring. Did not succeed.
Yeah.
It's hard out there. It is hard out there. This is such a crazy start to the year.
It's so hard to be a gamer these days, you know.
Yeah. Really.
Let's go back, you know, to 2021. We're all like, it's a weird year. I've played a million things. None of them are that great, but they're good. I like them.
Stuff certainly came out. You can't say that stuff didn't come out.
Gamers spent their money on games. Yes, they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too much last year and the beginning of this year on games. Sure. Too much money.
The last couple of months have been brutal for my bank account, but here we are. So
absolutely brutal. Well, folks, you know what is also potentially brutal? These games to our lives, you know? I don't know.
Nailed it. What a transition. You nailed it. Anyway.
So I wanted to just, you know, bring Greg in, treat it like a normal podcast. Greg, you are just one of us. You're one of the folks. Feel free to hop in wherever you want, but Chris or Zach, do one of you want to?
As I'm doing right now.
Chris or Zach, do either one of you want to start off with, you know, how a game has changed?
Hold on, can you stall for 1 second? I'm sorry, hold on, stall for 1 second. Just talk about whatever you want to do. If I'm one of the boys, hold on 1 second.
We're presently stalling. Honestly,
you're gonna unbutton your shirt.
honestly, great that he stepped away because I got a level with you two. How real are we getting here? Because mine's like mine has peaks and valleys.
mine gets
real rough, but then has a pretty okay ending.
Chris, I brought two just to feel the room.
Oh wow, man! Now I feel like dog shit. Games, pretty good. I like them. They made me think sometimes.
I have a story about how the Deadliest Catch game was so bad. I decided I need to be more careful with how I approach video games for the rest of my life.
Oh my god.
That, sorry, if I'm just one of the boys, I got to put on the save data dress code here. I didn't realize, you know.
Zach, that was a called shot.
No, that's very good burn. I deserve that one.
Absolutely so, wonderful.
You know what? We're getting one less button for that, okay?
You, know, you could have just...
Oh, I'll play this game, cowboy!
Oh,
all right. Shit. Oh, this is not what I expected today.
This is pretty par for the course for what we do over there today.
But video games that have changed our lives. I think you
should start.
Okay, sure.
Ron, go for it, yeah.
When you said this topic, I sat there thinking, okay, what game am I going to talk about? You know, is it going to be a game that emotionally affected me, philosophically affected me? One that comes back to me a lot of the times that I think a lot of people who've played it remember fondly, but it's not like, you know, a mega AAA hit, is the Talos Principle, which made by Crow Team, now owned by Devolver. They've basically only made the Serious Sam games, which aren't really my cup of tea, and also aren't really making the player think any deeper than just shooty shoot. But like this game... so deep in as far as like the terms that it or the thoughts that it forces you to wrestle with, as far as like what does it mean to be a person or be a human? What I like to say is it did Detroit Become Human about 5 years before Detroit Become Human, but also better than Detroit Become Human.
Well, not being written by David Cage will help with that. Typically speaking.
I was wondering how long it was going to be before you dunked.
You brought it up.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But
hey, if I didn't play the Talos Principle, which I certainly didn't, what the game like?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. Thank you. Basically, you wake up in this like very much Garden of Eden looking ass place, and straight up like a God voice comes on and is like, "Hello, you are my chosen child. Everything you see is gifted to you. Go forth and do these puzzles." Basically. And as you do, there are like little terminals, and it's all first person puzzles, kind of like The Witness, but it's not just drawing lines. It's you're walking around and placing things and stuff like that. But it's as you go through this, you're finding terminals and you're speaking to something on the other end of the terminal. You don't know what. And it's asking you these kind of hard philosophical questions of like, what would you do in this situation? Mm. Like what? Would you save your family for this? Would you do this? Yada, yada, yada. And hey, listen, I'm going to spoil this entire game right now in case you haven't played it.
You had your Talos shot, everybody.
This game is 7 years old. The big twist is like, okay, this God voice is constantly leading you throughout these different worlds. And at a certain point, the God is very early on. The God voice is like, "Do not go towards this tower. This is the only thing you cannot do." Very what is it? Forbidden fruit sort of thing. Garden of Eden.
So, how soon did you go to that tower?
as soon as possible.
That was the first thing you did. Okay,
I waited. But after you finish all the worlds, it's like, okay, go to this tomb and you've done everything I've asked of you. Go here. You've earned your eternal sleep. And I was like, well, okay, but what if I check out the tower? Also, the whole time you're playing, you're finding messages from other people, I guess, that have existed in this world.
Like actual players saying, or?
Yeah, players.
Not players. Okay. It comes off as like, it could be, but it's not. It's all AI. But it's them saying like, some of them are saying, don't trust God, basically.
Oh, is it kind of like the portal hidden messages?
Yes, exactly like that. And some of them are like.
Ratman.
Yes, but there's one particular voice you see a couple times that is like, do not trust God, blah, 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 blah. And so it's like, I'm going to check out the tower. And the whole twist is you're also finding audio logs because that was an extremely popular thing at the time. And basically the big twist is all of humanity is dead at this point. A virus, how topical that aged.
Suck on that Nier.
Oof. Yeah, came in just
out here spoiling
out.
Several games, aren't we? Look,
if you haven't played Nier Automata, I can't help you.
I was about to get ending number 7 tonight.
No,
gotta get that fish ending. It's coming up soon.
But the all of humanity is dead. But basically, you're finding these audio logs from this group of scientists who were trying to create an AI to be like humanity's surrogate moving forward. Because they're like, well, can't kill robots, virus, haha. And just the a lot of it is like, okay, it's like a month. They're like, oh, in about a year, everybody will be dead. Okay, in about 6 months, everybody will be dead. Then you get to like the later audio logs, and it's like half of the team went home to spend their last few weeks with their family, like all this stuff. And it gets really emotional. And the final ending of it is basically you had to go to the tower because this whole thing you're in is a simulation, and it's trying to recreate what it means to be a human, basically. And it's you're getting smarter with the machine learning of solving the puzzles, but it's also the philosophical questions of like, okay, the whole thing with God is like, it's human nature to kind of rebel against authority in some way, shape, or form. And like, that is the ultimate test at the end. And the final like puzzle sequence is you're doing this final thing to climb to the very top of the tower. And there is one like other simulation thing that is actively trying to stop you because it sides with this God voice. And the other one that whose messages you were reading earlier, like don't trust God, don't trust him.
Yeah.
He is there actively trying to help you get through the puzzles, but he himself cannot get to like the final area. Hmm. And it's such a like moment at the very end. And it's such a banger game.
Like, I don't want to dunk on you.
A little bit talking about it.
I don't want to dunk on you this early into the podcast. How did this affect you?
No, it sounds like
you just liked the video game, my guy.
No, it made me think about like what it means to be human, and like, God forbid, we do actually succeed in making an AI that like is sentient in the future, which maybe will happen in our lifetimes. At that point, I think you have to consider that the same as a human being as, or same as a person as we are, which is like
be better
a super heady concept. Yeah, I know.
It'll come to the same conclusion every sci-fi AI comes to of like, man, the only problem with Earth is the people.
Yeah.
we got to protect the Earth. Let's get rid of the people.
Exactly. But it's when it comes to games that like I still think about a lot, like that is one of them. I mean, like Outer Wilds, I think is a better game overall.
I expected you were going to talk about Outer Wilds just because I know that is
your whole story. Outer Wilds is immaculate. But I don't think the concepts in that game affected me, or I don't think I think about them as much. Like I'm not really thinking about the end of the universe because I'm going to be long dead before that happens. But
hopefully,
oh God, I sure hope so.
Hey, we'll see. So. This could be some like Children of Men shit where like you could be alive to see the end of the world, which is rad.
No, it's not. Probably not.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, thanks for putting a silver lining on that cloud.
Yeah.
Hey, wow. Look at the upside. You might see the end of existence.
Come on, that's dope.
Chris, give us your very uplifting thoughts about video games.
y'all know about that Firewatch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're going to go with this, though.
Yeah. So, Firewatch is a video game about a lot of things. Depression, survivor's guilt, fucking off and going to the forest, looking at nature,
hiking.
Taking photos of birds. Hiking, yeah. Just seeing America first. All that crap. And it's a very narrative-based game. It's pretty much only a single-shot story, and then you can also walk around and take photos and stuff if you like. And it deals with, like... Like the game's got some problems with like the whole like they wanted it to have suspense and stuff like that. Don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about so one of the main character, Henry. He basically receives almost all of the like narrative storytelling through someone talking about a walkie-talkie and then just stuff he finds in the environment. One of the environments or one of the things you keep encountering in the environment is there seems to be another person out here in the forest with Henry. Hey, spoilers for a 10-year-old game. Get over it. It's actually not that old.
I was going to say, Jesus Christ, it is not 10 years old. Is it?
It's like what? It's like 5? It has to be like 5,
something
right?
like that. Yeah, it was we were at kind of funny for it.
Yeah. Spoilers for Firewatch. there is a guy out here. His name is Nick, I'm relatively certain. 6 years old.
Six.
So I was 20 when I played this. Okay. God, that's wild.
Jeez.
I know. Anyway. Yeah, there's a guy here in the forest. His name is Nick. He basically did the thing that Henry is doing, the Firewatch program, a while back with his son, whose name I don't recall. Not important. Sorry, kid. And basically, the father is this very, like, macho, traditional dad, like, wants to go out in the forest and, you know, chop wood and drink beer and God bless America. And his son is, he's a nerd. He has, like, a D&D booklet and he just wants to, like, you know,
he's one of us.
And, yeah.
He's as old as time.
Yeah, he's, hey, he's to make the player go, oh, like me.
I'm an indoor kid, too.
Yeah, exactly. And through events that happened on their trip, the kid dies and the dad doesn't know how to handle it. And just kind of goes into like survival panic mode and has been hiding in the woods ever since. This is going to get weird and I apologize for that, but don't worry. It ends good. hey, my dad, not a great dude, dipped when I was very young. Later in life tried to be like, hey, I'm going to rekindle that relationship with my kids. My siblings and I are like, nah, you ain't chief. Sorry about
I've decided I'm going to come back into your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yes. Yes, Greg. And so after playing this, I was like, man, I feel bad for the dad character, Nick, because like he fucked up and he understands that. And he actively has no way of repairing it and, you know, has thrown his life away because of it. So I was like, I feel like I should try to rekindle my relationship with my father. Yeah. Gonna cut the long story short, I was mistaken to do that.
Damn it, that was such a sweet, we're such a sweet setup, like we're gonna get to a really great moment. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, nah, he still fucking sucks.
You know, like when like a fancy waiter at a place can do the thing where they pull the what do you call it, like the table sheet off the table and everything stays perfect?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I like I do that and then I knock the table over anyway.
Gotcha.
Just to make sure we're all on the same level. Tempted to, you know, reach back out to my father, try to begin a relationship. Turns out, roughly 15, 16 years after leaving a family, still a bad person. And so like Firewatch to me, like every time I think about it, it reminds me like the lesson I learned from that game, which is not the lesson this game intended for you to learn, but it is the one I learned, is that like, while, yes, you can totally, like, you can always go back, you can always try to fix a relationship. Also, sometimes relationships just aren't worth fixing. And it can be your fault, it can be somebody else's fault, it can be mixed the two. But it's also, like, it's not on you to have to fix it. I'm a very solutions-oriented person just in general. But, man, there is actually something incredibly, I don't know, empowering about realizing that, like, not only is it not on me to fix it, like, it's not my fault, yeah. And also, fuck you.
For sure, yeah, still, for sure.
Trust that one.
Yeah. Hey, at the end of every story, there should be a fuck you. I'm sorry.
I don't know about every story.
at the end of Lord of the Rings, Bilbo Frodo's sitting there smoking out of his pipe. He looks at the camera. Fuck you. Credits roll. Directed by Peter Jackson.
And they lived happily ever after. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
And the three wise men left the manger, and Mary said, "Fuck you."
Y'all are proving my point. Is all I'm saying.
Now, not to segue from this, Greg, did you unbutton more buttons?
Yeah, you did. So I did.
We're playing a dangerous game.
I'm just trying to, yeah, I'm one of the boys. I'm one of the Save Data boys. All right, I'm just trying to keep up out here.
Now, Greg, compared to you in the games industry, we are all prepubescent children. Sure. Not in actual age, but in the actual.
Two of us are 31.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's what I mean. Not in age, but in, you know, presence in the industry, being into games for as long as you've been.
Sure.
I don't think Zach and I were in what, fourth grade, deciding I want to be a games journalist.
Sure. Yeah.
I certainly fell into this one. So Zach just randomly hit me up. I was like, hey, you want to be on a show? Sure.
This is true. This is
three
true.
Years later.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we are.
Love it.
So I'm really curious for you specifically, Greg. Like, what types of games have touched you?
Well, it's interesting, you know, you guys have such great stories about it, right? And these like personal, like introspective moments, which I have too, I guess, as I go. But when I heard the question, like the first thing I jumped to was Ghostbusters on the Sega Master System. Not because it changed the way I thought or, you know, empathized or something like that, but because it changed the path of my life, right? Like, I was a Ghostbusters fan. I was a little kid obsessed with Ghostbusters. And so, you know, walking through Toys R Us, my mom took me down the video game aisle by just chance to get over to the real Ghostbuster toys. And we were walking and I stopped and I turned and I saw the No Ghost logo and I pointed at the box and I was like, what is that? And mom said, you know, that's a video game. And I was like, she explained what it was. And I was like, I want that. And I want that for my birthday. And, you know, they bought me the game. Uncle Mike bought me the Sega Master System. And like, that was me introduced to video games. And then, you know, shocked to find out that nobody else owned a Sega. Everybody else had an NES and I was some weirdo, but that's not part of the story. It was the fact that, you know, like I think about all the time of like, what if we hadn't gone down that aisle, when do I get introduced to video games? Do they resonate? Like, you imagine it would be, I was at a friend's house and I get, they're playing NES, they're playing Mario, and I see that, and would I have such a visceral disdain for Mario like I did because I was a Sega kid? What is this? They're making fun of my Master System. I'll make fun of this entertainment system. What is this? Like, I wonder now, stuff
is
like that.
The game, is that the game that made you realize, like, going forward, I'm in on video games. I've bought in. Or was it, like, later? Like, I for me, vividly, Street Fighter Third Strike, I know. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to play video games for the rest of my life.
It wasn't, I don't think, you know, it being so young as I was when I got this, right? Because I would have been, geez Louise. I get the Genesis in first grade. So this is maybe kindergarten, maybe pre-K or whatever. Like
4 or 5.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm young. And so like, I don't think I had that level of it. I did know immediately like this was like, I loved this and this was like my hobby kind of thing where it was, you know, that's obviously before I'm reading. So it's before I'm into comics. Like this was, you know, this interactive art that I was able to go do. And I wasn't obviously calling it interactive art, but I was playing it and doing it. I don't have the moment of like, oh man, this really is going to be my life until the fourth grade story is correct, right? Of like issue of Game Pro on the cover, Death and Return of Superman on the inside, Maximum Carnage, read it every night, called the stores every night on my little card. And you know, a month of reading it cover to cover, I walked in the kitchen and I told my mom, like, I'm going to do this. I know what I want to do with my life. She said, what? And I said, I want to write about video games. And they said, okay. It would be in terms of like, oh, I'm definitely, this is there's no getting off. It would be, I get off a lot, but there's no getting off this train.
Sweet.
Gotta stop. One more button.
Oh my god!
Not on the shirt though.
No, the one that was like, I'm in this the rest of my life was Metal Gear Solid on PS1. Where
nice,
For sure, you know, grade four. That's what put me on the path, and that's what doing it. But like, you know, it's a tired story for Kind of Funny Best Friends. So I apologize. But it was, you know, freshman year homecoming. I reunited with some kids from junior high that I hadn't seen in a while, and we were talking. One of them was like, so are you still into video games? And I didn't say it as I do now, you know, with all these years of reflection, but I said something to the effect of like, yeah, but I don't know. Like it was very much like, I felt like I was aging out of games where it was, you know, it was like, you know, we were still waiting for Conker's Bad Fur Day. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, what is this really going to become? Is Mario, you know, 64 really the end all be all of what this can be and where games are going to go and yada yada? Are there always going to be a toy, a distraction kind of thing? And so, it wasn't too long after that where, you know, PS1 entered my life, and then me and Poe went and rented Army Men, Sarge's Heroes and Metal Gear Solid. And we didn't play Army Men for long, and then we popped in Metal Gear Solid. And I remember being like, oh, I've read about this in EGM, you know what I mean? Like, I remember them talking about this, and we popped it in, and it was just like, you know, that game we played until whatever, 2 a.m. Like, and I think he came back the next day immediately to beat it with me. And it was like, this was unlike anything I had ever seen. And that was the one where I was like, the cinematography of the beginning, you know, when the credits are rolling, and it like, you look at it now and it's so funny. But like back then we were like, is this a movie? Or is it a game or is it a movie? Oh my God. You know, you come out of the water and like just going through that and getting that Snake, Solid Snake story and the voice acting and the twist and the turn and, you know, Sniper Wolf and Meryl and like the way they were eliciting responses from you. Kojima was eliciting responses from us. It was like, oh no, I'm all in. I'm not, this is, you know, I always talk about it now, you know, with all these years behind me of like how lucky I've been that the art form aged with me, like it matured with me. So there's that growing pain of like, man, is it always going to be these blocky, colorful graphics and like, you know, a distraction, or is it going to be something that can then become Metal Gear and do all these different things? And like now, obviously, you know, you can still get all manner of, you know, just a game to put jump in with your friends and screw around with, or you can get you know, Gone Home. You can go and you can get God of War. You can go and get Last of Us. You can get these experiences that are something truly unique and special in so many ways. And so that was the one where it was, okay, cool. I am committed. I'm not going anywhere. This is going to be my life, and that's where I'm going to go. And so Metal Gear is on that list of games that changed my life, right? But then, you know, for the questions you're talking about and the examples you're pulling, I would go to Gone Home next for me, where it's like Gone Home, you know, is always a game I point to when people are talking about the power of video games and what you can do with them. And, you know, I think already we're kind of funny, are in such a blessed position because our audience is so empathetic and is so want to take care of each other and want to do the right thing. And I feel like those are, we feel that way because of the experiences we've had. And so, you know, I talk about, you know, the regrets I've had in my life, right? And the times I've not understood the words I'm using are painful or hurtful, right? Until somebody has to stop me that I respected, no, and say, hey, think about what you're saying, what you're doing, yada, yada, yada. And those are those like gut check, oh my God, thank you for doing that, moments that's kind of turning around. And so Gone Home obviously comes out at a point where I'm already an adult, I'm already working at IGN, I'm already doing all these things. But it was so different and hit in such a unique way because I'm never going to be a teenage girl wrestling with her sexuality. And even today, I'd like to think that if I knew, because again, you don't play that character in Gone Home. You're a sister. Mm-hmm. You find letters around the house and you try to piece together what has happened to your sister, where she is. Okay. And throughout that adventure, you slowly, it seems like it's going to be a horror game to start. But when you start piecing it together, it's actually a love story of your sister's first love, falling in love with a girl in her class. And so going through and doing that, like I would like to imagine, it was, you know, it's set in the 90s. So it's set, even though this sounds ridiculous now, I would like to think though, in a less tolerant era where, you know, being gay is more of a scarlet letter than it is now. And for so long, I thought we were fighting really, doing really well in that battle. And then every day now, it seems like it's a little bit worse on that front. Yeah. But to separate them from that, right, it was the idea that like, even if I was to, I like to think, know an adolescent woman right now, an adolescent girl who's coming to terms with her sexuality, I would hope, at least, again, I'm in San Francisco, I'm in California, that it wouldn't be such a closeted, shameful experience, right? And so it was so personal playing this fictional game. It read and played so much like I was reading someone's real diary as they go through these mundane moments, but then also these character defining moments and life changing moments. And so to read through that and go through that. And then not only that, it was a game at the time that, you know, everyone I knew and respected in the games industry was beating it and saying, go play this game and don't read anything about it. Just jump into it, go play it, go do it, blah, blah. And so I sat down and did that. And like I said, I thought it was a horror game for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then you start getting
I did as well. Yeah.
You get this side story of like, okay, cool. She's, and then there's that moment where it's like, wait, is there no ghosts in this house? Is it really just that? Then you get to the end and like there's this whole ramp up to where your sister actually is and what's going on. And like, you get this happy, bittersweet ending from it. That isn't like, you know, all, you know, sunshine and roses, but it is also, you know, happy for the characters that went on this journey. And I remember finishing that and, you know, calling used to make fun of me. I finished it and immediately went into the other room where my girlfriend at the time, Christine, was playing Guild Wars and hugged her. And it was just like, I didn't know how to express that. Like I had so many emotions inside me of going through this thing and really falling in love with a character, not romantic love, but like, I love Sam and Lonnie. I loved their relationship. Mm-hmm. And so to see how it was tested and pushed and all this stuff, it resonated in a way that I don't think reading an article would, or even like watching a movie would. Like I got to live that moment to moment, and I got to have that. I got to go through the adventure as the sister, where it was, what is going on here? Has everybody been murdered? Is there a ghost? What, blah, blah. And then it was like, no, it's actually more important than any of that. It's my sister, you know, coming to terms with that. And like, it's still hard, I think, to put into words exactly what it meant, but it just resonated so strongly with me in a way that, you know, an experience I can never have and never would have. I don't have a sister. I'd like to think we're more tolerant, yada, yada, yada. Like to have that really, I feel like once in a lifetime experience was incredibly special.
Did you play that like just because everyone was talking about it, or did you play that for work effectively?
I played it more because everyone was talking about it. I remember Mitch was talking about it. And I think then I came off and I was really like championing it for IGN for a long time, where I was like, I remember buying it for fans and stuff and doing a few different things. So I think it wasn't like where we were talking game of the year or anything like that. I think it was just like, hey, this is a special game, you need to play it.
I always think about that now, like with any kind of media really, is like, watching, interacting with it, playing with it, it's like, if I'm doing it as in a work capacity, am I thinking of this differently than I would if I was just playing it regular?
For sure, yeah. And that was the thing, that, you know, it was a game that I forget now, but it's only a couple hours. So it was like just a Sunday like afternoon on a lark. I was like, oh, I'll do this. And, you know, playing it on the PC I had hooked up to the TV, so I was using the coffee table as this weird desk or whatever. Like, it wasn't like a big investment in the same way, you know, like I'm playing Ghostwire Tokyo now, like that's for work, and like that's, you know, very much like, oh, I need to budget my time and I need to hit this embargo for the preview, so da, 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 da. Like that there weren't those restrictions on it.
Yeah
That's all. It's one of those, like, the it's the power of games, of like the medium is unique in the ways that it can make you experience a story and feel certain things, and Gone Home does it really, really well.
And that's the thing, right? Those games can put you into somebody else's shoes, and I think, you know, like it's honestly very, it's a reaction right out of it, and I think it's so interesting in the way that, like, it's similar in the way I think a lot of us feel at the end of Last of Us. Where I, you know, my old story with that is, right, like, spoilers for Last of Us. When you get into the operating room, like, I got killed because I waited for the choice to pop up. I thought for sure I was going to get a choice, and I didn't get a choice. You know what I mean? Like, Naughty Dog was telling me a story, and even though it seemed like I was, me and Joel were aligned for a lot of our thoughts and opinions on things, when we got to this one, we weren't, and there was no way around it. And then it was like finishing that game and wanting to go discuss that in a very specific way. And then I think they really doubled down with The Last of Us Part Two, where it was like, cool. Like, we're going to put you in all sorts of situations with Ellie and Abby that you do not agree with what they're doing, and you wouldn't do it necessarily do the same way. And like, that is going to be something where you're playing it and you love these characters, but you hate what they're doing and you don't know. Like, we're making you experience this and literally walk in their shoes, which, again, a movie doesn't do. Movies, you watch a horror movie, and it's, oh, don't go upstairs, you idiot, or something like that. But you're not like, you haven't spent so many hours feeling like you're them in a way and connecting with them and being really given such a unique look into somebody's head, right? Like, in a movie, you'll get out, you'll see the character in a montage set to a peppy song, get up, snatch their keys, their wallet, run out the thing, miss the bus, and oh, shucks, or whatever. Whereas, like, you know, you wake up in Last of Us as Ellie and you walk around the room and you choose what you pick up and you hear stories and you see the robot toy, right, from when she ran into Sam and Henry. It's like, oh, man, like, that means something, that resonates. We have a history there and I'm experiencing it at my pace, even though it's her pace. And then to get that, you know, the control wrestled away in certain decisions and stuff, it's like, oh man, like, this is such a unique form of storytelling that only video games can do.
Yeah.
Okay. It's funny you mentioned the horror story. Like, why'd you go in there? Why would you go in there? I was playing Returnal, and for one of the house sequences, went to the house, duh. And my partner Vic was sitting on the couch next to me, and she goes, why would you go in the house? What the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah. Dude, that was always, that was video game. You know, I loved it, obviously, despite all its warts and flaws, but that was always one of my favorite things about Friday the 13th. Is that I remember playing those games and streaming those games and hanging out, and it would be that thing of like, when you're the counselor running from Jason, you'd watch Nick or whoever, and they'd go and hide. Like, oh my God, why would you? I'm like, oh my God, this is how you watch a movie. This is how you watch a horror movie. Everybody has their own idea of what they should do, but when you watch someone else do it, it's rarely ever what you would do. Like, oh my God, put down the gas. You're never going to get the boat running. Like, oh. But like, you just felt like that's how you had it. It's such a bizarre thing that that game, because it was buggy as all hell, obviously, I don't think got enough credit for it. Of like, man, this really did enact the vibe of a horror movie in a way most games don't.
Yeah.
David, what about you? What game has changed your life?
This one, okay. I wasn't sure I was going to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about this one. So I'm going to talk about Celeste.
Ooh.
Celeste is a very special game that I have only recently realized is so special.
Really?
So flashback, 2018, year Celeste came out. Heard it was great. Platforming game, 10 out of 10s. I was like, oh, I got to get me some of this game. Played it.
I
loved
see what
it.
This is about.
Loved the whole thing. Didn't think about it too hard. You know, there's a great story there.
On to the next one.
I was like, this is great. I'm going to go on to the next one. I wasn't critically looking at games yet. So I was like, oh, this was great. Had a good time with it. Loved the game. Bought a bunch of merch. Not something I usually do. Something was wrong up here, right? Just something was noodling. I didn't know it was there. Just stuck in the back of my head. Flash forward to this year. Starting to reevaluate some of the things that I really liked in the past and finding like imagery and stuff in them. So recently popped open Celeste again. Not a long game. It's like 6-8 hours. So popped it open, started playing through it again. And folks, let's talk about mental health briefly.
What? In Celeste? No.
In Celeste? No. So Celeste, fantastic platforming game. Not a ton of dialogue and story, but the parts that are in there are incredibly powerful once you actually like read into them if you can relate to them. Mm-hmm. It's very much a story of depression, and it's very much later even the creator, Maddie, learned that it was a story, like a trans story, which that's not my side. I'm not even going to pretend to go over there. But on the depression side, I've been dealing with that for like 25 years. It's been a long time. It's just there, you know? It happens. Deal with it. Move along. Push everything down. That's going to sound familiar to the Celeste story in a second. You just shove it down. You don't deal with it. You just keep moving on. And so I played Celeste the first time, didn't think about it. Playing Celeste this time, I'm literally every time that she is talking to someone, I'm like, oh my God. This is just me. It is me in a video game. Every single one of these discussions. If you haven't played it, there's the main character, Madeline, and there is her dark reflection, Madeline. I think that's her official name.
Madeline,
That's what I thought. And Madeline is, while climbing the mountain, trying to prevent Madeline from going up, trying to talk her down, like, you can't do this. You're not able to climb this mountain. You're insane. Quit now. I'm protecting you from harm. And one of the things, if you have had depression or are dealing with it, there are a lot of reasons for why you put yourself down. And one of the ones that I'm only recently discovering is that a lot of it is, you know, protective qualities about your own mind that have helped you in the past, like helped you deal with situations, helped you push through things. But then it goes to a point where it's bad. It's a coping mechanism gone to the extreme, where it's like, okay, now you're actually harming yourself. And that is what Madeline is. And it took me 4 years to realize that that's what Madeline was. She was coping mechanisms gone completely mad to the point where it's harming Madeline. And the entire story up for the first 5 chapters, I think, is Madeline trying to get rid of Madeline, trying to just wipe her out, because she's like, no, this is a horrible part of me. This isn't what I want it to be. I want to just wipe this part from existence, which is not how mental health works, mm-hmm. and not how those issues go away. You don't just wipe them out. They don't clear out. You're good to go for the rest of your life. Not how that works. It's a dance of trying to get into balanced, healthy ways to cope with things, balanced, healthy ways to, you know, deal with your own shit. And keep moving on in life. And Madeline doesn't realize this. I didn't realize this for years. That, like, hey, you know, we need to actually get into a balance, not just wipe out the bad parts. There's good parts to those bad parts.
Also, like, what a clever subversion of, like, it's a video game. You beat the bad guy. That's what you do in a video game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, yes, but this... so many things, movies, games, they're like, we're about a thing, but we're not about that thing. Whereas Celeste is like, no, this is a game about depression. You need to fucking understand that and level with it.
Yeah.
Like, that's good. That's fine. And it's a better way to start a conversation about, like, this is a game about depression than to be like, this is a game about themes and you'll figure it out. But it's like, no, Celeste is like, everyone is understanding what we're talking about here.
Oh, let's get on the same page and then we'll tell you the story. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a character by a campfire who literally is like, yo, you're depressed. What's up? And then, like, even back then, I'm like, oh yeah, I mean, Madeline's depressed, whatever, she'll figure it out, it's fine. This is the character in the game. This isn't me. This has nothing to do with why I like this game so much. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, no, completely detached. This isn't related. The same.
No. It's just the ways they describe everything is so perfect. If you're out there and you're like, hey, I have a friend with depression and I want to try and understand how they feel, Celeste is a fantastic game for you to play. Mm-hmm. If you are depressed and you want to feel like understood and, you know, understand more about yourself, Celeste, also a great game to play. But it's just like the parts, they ask questions in there. Theo, the character who's climbing the mountain, sort of alongside Madeline, even talks to her about her whole experience of, like, well, what is it like? And the way Madeline describes it is, it's like being really deep in the ocean, and you're so deep that you can't see anything around you. It's dark, it's cloudy, and no matter which way you go, you still feel lost. You don't feel like you hit anything. And like, that's such a good explanation for the way it feels for me too, of like, hey, you're always trying to like get in the right direction, but you don't, it's so hard to actually get there sometimes.
For sure.
And sometimes you need a little light, and occasionally that light is an anglerfish, and you end up like, you know, getting fucked up by yourself for those things around you. But other times, you know, it's actually leading you up to the surface. And it's such a fantastic message. And the way that they tell the story of Madeline and Madeline actually starting to work together is done so exceptionally well. Like, you have basically Madeline gets explained to her by this old woman who lives on the mountain that, like, at a point where Madeline's at her lowest, gonna give up, the old woman's like, oh, shame you're giving up. I thought you were gonna make it. And I was like, why? What's so special about me? And the old woman's like, oh no, you just hate yourself so much. Like, I figured you'd do it despite yourself. And like, that's such a like depression self-loathing thing of like, you'll push yourself through due to even self-hate it sometimes. And I was just like, oh, okay, this is, I really didn't need every single piece of dialogue in this game to like hurt me.
To hit you, hit you right in the chops, yeah.
She's like, no, you need to go figure it out.
Doesn't so, also, like, once Madeline and Madeline coalesce, doesn't that, don't you like change, you have an additional jump, right?
Yeah, it ties into the gameplay.
That's exactly what I was getting to, because that's sections right before there. So you fight Madeline, you have a kind of makeup session where Madeline's like, hey, I get that you're afraid because I'm afraid too, but we both need each other if we're going to climb this mountain. And the mountain is life, y'all. That's just what the mountain is.
What? No. It's a and metaphor so once, for something else.
Once they start working together, like, Madeline is a stronger person. So you get that second jump. You can start climbing to different heights that you weren't able to climb before. Get over obstacles that you weren't able to get over before.
So smart. So brilliant.
Sense the symbolism. It's just... and then even then, once you combine into one Madeline, you're going back up through the areas you had been before, but you're able to go through them so much faster now because you have that double jump, so you can get through those different floors really quickly. You can get up to areas that you hadn't seen before, and between each level you're having another dialogue with Madeline, slowly improving your relationship and making Madeline less scared and Madeline less scared, like working together better and getting higher and higher up, getting more power as you keep going up. And eventually, like, Madeline's last quote before you're combined for the rest of the game is, I think it's, you know what's really scaring me? I think we might actually be able to do this. Like, we might actually be able to get up the mountain, which is another thing. If you're not familiar with depression, the climb up is terrifying. Yeah. So like, when you're in the pits, the climb up is like, it's terrifying because even if you get up there, you're always afraid of the fall back down. That's always always there, of like, I've been at the depths and I don't want to be at the depths again. And if I'm at the top, that means I can be at the depths again. Whereas if I just stay down here,
everything's fine.
I can't get worse. It can't get worse. I'm already at the bottom. So like, just the way that game explains that entire cycle in such intelligent and symbolic and tying it in the gameplay is just so amazing to me. And it's also amazing to me that I played it once and didn't fucking have any of that click into my brain.
Cool game. Put it down, moved on.
Yeah. You're like, oh, strawberries, sweet.
Yeah.
Toss the switch out window.
Yeah, this is recent. I was going to talk about a completely different game today, and I played Celeste last week.
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow, shit.
So this is a very recent discovery, but like, it's fantastic. I recommend anyone who has struggles with that stuff to give it a try. And part of why I want to talk about it is there's a mental health stigma, and there shouldn't be. So, for like, sure. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had mentioned it earlier, and I feel like it's such a thing that people say in games nowadays, where it's like, games is a unique medium. But like, it is the power of games, like, take a thing that seems like this completely non-actionable problem and like display through games that, like, yeah, it is actionable, but it's also not like not beatable. Like it is a thing that you work at, and it's like, and like everything else, work is difficult.
Well, I think games have this unique piece, whereas books and movies, music, they all have this thing about them where the character isn't you. Mm-hmm. It is this out of body person. It's another person, no matter what. Whereas even when I took notes this time when I was playing Celeste, I'm writing, and sometimes I'm using Madeline, and sometimes I'm using me. Mm. And it's like, that is a unique game experience because you are playing the character. That character is you.
Think about it, right? When you play a game, and if somebody, what happened? I died. You died, yeah. Right? It's not Mario died. Mario fell off a thing and died. Mario didn't make this mushroom walked in and hit Mario. Like, you know, it's like, I died. You're part of that journey, right? Yeah. It is very much. And that's why it's always interesting when you play a game that is like, you know, you have somebody in their head, right? Where it's like, well, there's like three of us in here now. So it's like, all right, we're all part of this thing. But it is that idea of like, you're pushing them through that story. You're doing that. And even if you're not making choices in their narrative, often you're making choices in what they're using, you know what I mean? What kind of weapon, what kind of armor, what kind of class. Yeah. Like there are these things that give you ownership over something in a way. You're right. Reading a book doesn't. Reading a book, you are getting what the author intended you to get.
Yeah. Even linear games, like...
Sure.
Like a Last of Us, where it's like, in a lot of parts, you have one weapon. There's sometimes corridors where there's not a whole lot of choice on what you're going to do. So you're there, but it's still you. It's not Ellie. It's not Joel. It's
for sure.
Or it's not Abby. You're that.
It comes down to your skills, right? At the very base of it, like whatever you're making those choices. You're doing that thing. You're enacting the gameplay in the game world.
Mm-hmm. Do you find yourselves like in different kinds of games, like how you react to the player model, the player character differently? So like when I play Horizon, like I'll say like if I miss jump, sometimes I'll be like, God damn it, Aloy. But like
100% all the time.
In any game where I make my own character, basically, like in Elden Ring, I'm not gonna say like, damn it, whatever I named the
God
character.
Damn it, you tarnished.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come on, tarnished. No, I'm gonna say I fucked up.
I think for me, I typically just refer to myself for those ones.
Hmm. I think it comes down to you, especially it's funny you bring up Aloy, right? There's plenty of times that you miss a jump because of the controls are being clunky or she doesn't grab where you know you want her to grab.
Maybe that's what it is.
Right?
Like, yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
It's the parts that take you out. It's more of a game now. Yeah.
That is what it is. I did the input right. It's not my fault. It's her fault. God damn it.
You see the handhold I want you to go to. Why are you going left? What are you doing? Or in a cauldron trying to do that weird back jump thing they have you do with circle or X. It's been
Yeah. Hold away in circle and she'll do a backflip and what?
100%.
Heck yeah. Oh, one other thing I do want to bring up for Celeste. There's another piece where we're talking about, you know, feeling like the character. They actually make you stop and breathe like Madeline does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When she's dealing with her anxiety.
The two games that make you stop and breathe, Celeste and Wolfenstein.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Wii Sports.
I was going to say Wii Sports makes you go outside.
Three games!
You've been playing too long. Get the hell out of here.
Holy Trinity of games. Does Wii Sports do that? I don't remember that.
It tells you to stop playing like every 20 minutes or something.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know what we had.
Like, take a breather.
And Skyward Sword Fi telling you, your battery's low. You've been playing too long. Take a break. Go outside. Quiet, Miyamoto.
Let me play the damn game. It's my one day off.
This is my joy.
Oh, the one day off being spent playing Skyward Sword. That's rough, buddy.
Is it that bad?
I don't care for it.
This isn't what we're here for.
We can't do the Zelda cast again.
Yeah.
No. Awesome. Anyone else have any ones they want to bring up for you?
No. Mm. I mean, I look, we started early. Greg's had a long day. And I could easily... just for 20 minutes talk to Greg about wrestling, but I don't want to do that to the guests. Hold on. I do have one for you.
I mean, wrestling games have definitely changed my life, but go ahead.
You talked about Ghostbusters earlier.
Sure.
Did you watch the AEW Halloween main event?
No. Oh, but I saw clips. People sent me the clips. Yeah.
I was going to wonder if that was like a crystallizing moment for you when wrestling and Ghostbusters finally.
It was like Stay Puft, right? Then the guy dresses Stay Puft or whatever. And come on.
Yeah. Adam Page was a Stay Puft. And then, the Elite were all wearing the proton packs and dressed like the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I saw that. I saw those clips. Yeah. AEW is like weird fever dream I feel for me, where it's like I don't know the pay-per-views are happening and then they are happening, but then I'm just like watching the Twitter explode about it and then I'm just getting a million clips of it where I'm like,
yeah, you're just getting thousands.
I don't even know where I get it, but it's happening and I'm seeing it, so that's cool. Like, you know, everything that happens there, CM Punk covered in blood, chained to dude's necks and hitting him, like, Jesus Christ, man. Sting jumping off things like he's New Jack in ECW. I'm like, Lord,
60 years old jumping their tables.
Yeah.
I'm like 30 and I don't want to do that.
I'd be dead in minutes. I'm in terrible shape. Are you kidding me? Play video games all day. Like, what is it?
Are you playing WWE 2K22?
No, I haven't got it yet, but I was probably going to get it for us and then do some kind of bit. Is it as buggy as has been passed in the previous times?
I mean, it's still got, you know, a collision bug here or there.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like,
going
to
happen.
Online was effed up earlier this week, but I think they were trying to fix stuff. So it was just like, hey, it's pre-release, whatever. But no, that's great. Yeah. I can't wait to play more of it this weekend.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, Greg, thank you for coming on. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, of course, anytime. Kind of Funny Best Friends, thank you for making this happen on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames.
Hey, James, if you like, they can find us. Oh, you're doing it.
I'm just about to.
He's in the middle of
something. Zach, put a button up. Put a button up now, all right? You lose a button for that, all right?
Okay, change the shirt, damn it.
Has to get done now.
Oh, man.
Oh, you're doing top with a gap? Okay.
Yep. How do you?
That's a punishment worse than death, all right.
How do you think shirts work? is this new for you? Oh no. You guys look like you're about to fucking start telling me about, like, hey guys, you should come to youth camp after school.
This is how people showed up to bring you to work. That's a youth camp you don't want to go to. That is immediately a red flag. It was everybody watching.
I said that as you buttoned it, but then you like flared out the bottom. Like you're the worst superhero I know.
Yeah, I'm just reversing it the wrong way.
Like you're a Captain Underpants villain. I don't know if that joke tracks.
It works. No, I got it.
Well, if you like this awesome content of having our shirts sort of open, sort of closed, I don't know. If you like this, check us out on twitch.tv/savedatateam, youtube.com/savedatateam, savedatateam literally everywhere, all your social medias.
Type it into Patreon, Google, you'll find us.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, there's a Patreon too. Save the team, and also in about 15 minutes, if nothing's going on the Kind of Funny channel, we're going to be doing video game Jeopardy. I believe we have Carlos from Nerd a Day. Is that right, Zach?
Correct.
You know, correct. The people that are actually coming.
Yeah, Carlos from Nerd a Day. We got another. I don't know if they've been involved with Kind of Funny content, but Debate This Cast, another great podcast that we're friends with, and Elise, who is one of our own members. On that competing, and people can watch. And we're actually doing some Steam code giveaways. As
That's
well.
Awesome.
So,
yeah. We'll host video, for sure. Video game Jeopardy, a blast. And Zach actually does very good at it. When I host it, it's questionable.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to censor it when Chris hosts it. This is not a joke.
Yeah, we did have a video get demonetized. Chris's choices in questions.
Thank you, everybody.
You can censor me, but you can't censor Rule 34. Sorry, go ahead, David.
God damn it.
We can. We did. We had to censor
it. Someone did, and it was me.
Thanks, everybody, for watching, listening. It's been a blast. Have a wonderful weekend.